Welcome back to the Garage Hockey Podcast. I'm Felix Sicard, joined as always by Nick and Joe Berger. I gotta say, guys, you guys look a little more tan this week. Care to explain what the cause of that is?
Spend some time in the sun, baby. Oh, yeah.
I saw the Snapchats, Santa Monica Pier.
Santa Monica Pier was beautiful. It was everything that it was cracked up to be. Saw maybe the most beautiful woman ever at a local establishment.
Oh, good.
It was a good time.
Good. Joe, did you what are your takeaways from Southern California?
I mean, she had on the Sharks game at the restaurant we were at, so I'm in love. But oh, whatever.
Yeah. You're also rocking a Sharks sweater right now, so
it's a little chilly.
A little chilly.
it is a bit nippy.
But
I do agree.
But we were in SoCal. We went to Griffith Observatory.
We learned that it was founded by someone with two first names.
Yeah, it was named after a guy whose parents hated him. His name was Griffith J. Griffith. That was his name.
God, that's awful.
It's bad. I don't know why they did that to him, but...
And you made Einstein look like a hipster.
I did. They have this statue of Einstein sitting down on like a bench, and he's pointing at something. And I took a Snapchat of it, and I pasted in that... the iPhone emoji onto his hand, so it looked like he was taking a selfie.
Oh, look at you.
So
you're so 2016.
I went to a place of science and I kind of tore it down.
Dine a selfie.
But it was fun. We went to Santa Monica Pier. The sun was out. The sun was not out, I heard, in the Bay Area.
Nah, man. It was rainy. It was cloudy. It was actually kind of nice. I think we need the rain.
We do need the rain.
It's been like 8 months without a drop of rain. But yeah, while you guys were basking in the Southern California sun, I just watched some hockey.
You did.
Watched a ton of games.
You got to see that Nashville game against, was it Chicago?
You know what? I actually didn't get to see it because I don't have NBCSN, which is a travesty. But I did watch a game that has caused a bit of a stir in the hockey world. Edmonton getting blown out by the Buffalo Sabres at home in Edmonton, 6-2. It's caused a bit of a stir, especially after the Oilers winning their first two games against the Calgary Flames. They drop kind of a bad one at home, and a lot of fallout from this game. Monday, the players and the coach agreed to forego their CBA-mandated day off to have a practice. So basically, they're practicing a day they don't have to.
And McClellan said it was because, well, our guys took the day off today, so we might as well skate tomorrow.
Yeah, they took the game off, so we're going to make them practice. I got to say, it's pretty hilarious to see the Oilers already sort of like, I don't know, like imploding, even though there's not really a big reason to implode.
Yeah, the thing is, because every team has that rock bottom moment during the season where they just play horrible and lose like 7-2 or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's kind of weird that we're getting that reaction from them three games into the season.
And it's weird because I didn't see the game, but I saw the highlights, and no one looked sharp. Like, you know, McClellan said it, from the goalie to the defenseman to the forwards.
Oh, well, Cam Talbot definitely didn't look sharp.
No, he did not.
That was bad.
Let in a goal from center ice, bouncing puck.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously the Oilers' defense is what it is.
care to elaborate on that one?
Was that maybe the nicest way to say that they're bad?
It was very passive aggressive, one of my favorite forms of criticism.
Yes.
But, and, you know, obviously, you know, their forwards, you know, offensively, you know, didn't look bad, but, you know, if you don't take care of the puck, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, how much possession you have. If, you know, Buffalo capitalized on every mistake. I exaggerate with the word every, but just about, you know, they, whatever Edmonton gave them an opening or some room, Buffalo took it and they scored, and Edmonton didn't. And so they looked awful.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because this is the game that's caused the most uproar, you know, in Edmonton. I actually think this is probably one of the better games they've played out of the three. I thought the first game they played against Calgary, they won 7-4, but they got outshot.
Weird.
And this game, they outshot Buffalo and they lost. So it's kind of funny that this is the game. I mean, and it's probably a bit of an accumulation, but this is the game that caused the uproar. Look, I got to say, I know there's been a lot of blowback on Twitter about, like, look, calm down, Edmonton. What are you guys doing? Todd McClellan, like, stop trashing Benoit Pouliot in press conferences. But I actually think, you know what? It's three games in. Let's just, why not hammer down the culture now? You know, like
they're already selling off assets because to build their team. So yeah they sort of have to take this mentality now.
I think it's healthy that this team is, and I hate to, you know, sound like a, you know, sort of mainstream media analyst here, but like I think it's healthy to establish the culture now, because I think that they've been losing for so long. This is the first year where there's a winning expectation. Why settle for anything less? You know, they played a bad game. And they're like, you know what? We're better than this. And I, to some degree, I think I stand by that. I applaud that.
Yeah, and especially with a group of young players, too, that have been losing for so long. Didn't Nail Yakupov have a quote recently? When someone asked him about the trade to St. Louis, and it just sounded like they were so used to losing.
Yeah.
So I totally get where Todd McClellan is coming from of trying to just beat a new winning culture into their mindset, because I think they just sort of, they haven't really known what it's like.
And it's going to take a lot of undoing, because I go back to this play periodically, but a few years ago, I can't remember who hit him or what team the Oilers were even playing, but Leon Draisaitl got lit up on the boards.
So that was last year?
Maybe not Draisaitl.
Because he was a rookie last year, wasn't he? Well, it was someone.
Yeah, it was one of their young guys, one of their many young guys, 1 or 2 years ago, got lit up, and it was a blatant boarding call. And you know how typically after a gritty play, you know, legal or not, teams tend to come together and push and shove. After the other player got lit up, there was no reaction except for Taylor Hall, who... So almost, he looked sort of begrudgingly, like he skated over, like, okay, I have to do this, and just came over and lightly pushed the guy that took the boarding penalty, and you know, no one stood up for each other.
Yeah,
you know, they sucked. They weren't winning. They weren't having fun. They weren't playing for each other, and that's what that play showed. And you know, there's still a fair amount of those players still there. So there, even though that may have been 1 or 2 years ago, I think it was like 2 years ago.
Well, Taylor Hall's gone, so they got rid of the problem, right?
Yeah, apparently. Adam Larson here to save the day.
Yeah, so yeah, there's still a lot of, not just, you know, instilling a new culture, undoing the old one.
Yeah.
The first overall draft pick culture.
Yeah, but I also think that, look, I think it's good that they're being more critical of themselves, but I also think this team is already better. Like, you can see the way they play. They're not a bad team anymore. But their defense looks very suspect. I think
that is what it is.
I mean, Adam Larson, I've watched three games. I've watched every Oilers game so far. Not entirely for the most recent, the two most recent games. But I watched the entirety of the first game. And I honestly, I'm not really blown away by this guy. He's like a solid defenseman, kind of does what he does. You know, like, I mean, what is there to really say about this guy? So they're clearly still deficient in that area. I love the speed they have up front. Like, I've been blown away by how dangerous they can look rushing up the ice, especially in the neutral zone. They get through that neutral zone really easily. And I've already seen people calling out Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, and I'm like, I feel like he's maybe not the problem. Maybe it's that you have, like, Oscar Klefbom and Adam Larson as your top pairing.
Right.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah. I haven't gotten a chance to see them yet, but from what it sounds like, it sounds like what we expected. We're good up front, and then defensively is the issue. And then Cam Talbot letting in goals from the red line.
Yeah, and then Anton Lander took... That's the funny thing, is I know that Benoit Pouliot took a lot of penalties in the last two games, and that's going to cause... I mean, that got him benched, but Anton Lander took one of the stupidest penalties I've ever seen. It was in... I think it was the third period of the last game where either he gets tripped or... Like, he gets hit or something, and he's frustrated. The guy turns around, and he just cracks him, like, in the back of the shin with a stick, just a two-handed slash. And obviously he gets the penalty, but it's like, what are you doing, you know?
It sounds like that's going around, because didn't Benoit Pouliot, one of the many penalties that he took recently, I think was an unsportsmanlike penalty?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was his third penalty.
Oh, yeah, because he was jawing at the ref. Yeah, oh, okay. He wouldn't stop jawing at the ref. So, yeah, I mean... I think this team will be fine, but it's really funny watching Milan Lucic sort of trying to gel with this group, because they're all fast, they're all skilled for the most part, and then you have Lucic, who's not super skilled, not super fast, and it's just kind of funny watching him trying to gel with like Connor McDavid. I think they've already taken him off McDavid's line.
Really?
They tried him next to Nugent Hopkins at times during the game. I saw him with Dry. I mean, like, they were flipping lines around all of the last game trying to find something. But
that's part of McClellan's MO.
And I think that's a good thing in the early part of the season to sort of see what you have with different combinations. But I don't know. It's funny how this is really already sort of blowing up for them.
Yeah. The Lucic thing, do you think they thought about that enough? The fact that we have a bunch of really,
absolutely not,
really fast forwards, and then Lucic, he is good, but
he's good. Yeah, he's very good.
But if he can't keep up with his line mates,
I mean, he can keep up. Like, I don't think that keeping up isn't really the issue. It's just that stylistically, it doesn't seem to make sense. You know, like, I feel like if you're going to be a fast team, if all your guys are fast, like, let's just have all the fast guys. You know, look at Pittsburgh.
Right.
That's sort of what they did. So when you throw in a guy who's not quite as fast or doesn't play that East-West game, I feel like it just doesn't really make sense.
That's but true.
Peter Chiarelli did his scouting. He knows that that Lucci's wife, you know, can cook him a healthy dinner.
Yeah. I mean,
the things that really matter.
I don't want to really, like, harp too much on Lucic because, again, I don't feel like he's part of the problem. I don't really feel like there's a huge problem on this team. I think you look at the way they're playing, and I think, honestly, they're playing the best that this roster is really capable of. Like, I don't know how much more they can really get out of this team. What can you really do with a roster that doesn't really have a blue line?
Yeah.
You know, like, it's, you're going to get the defensive mistakes. You're going to get the lapses. And sure, you can ask more of your forwards and have them be more responsible defensively, but you can only do so much when supposedly your best defenseman is Adam Larsson.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. There's only so much that the forwards can do.
And so I think that's going to be the story all season, and we're going to see an Eberle or Nugent Hopkins traded. Probably, I mean, it happened to Taylor Hall. He's one of the better players, and he gets blamed for the team's deficiencies, even though realistically it's through no fault of his own. And then I saw someone else tweet that Jesse Puljujärvi should be sent down to the AHL, like, for more seasoning. It's like, okay, sure, send him out to the AHL. Who do you got now on your roster?
Yeah.
Like, who are you going to bring up? Like, this, I think he looks pretty good, actually. From what I've seen of him, he seems like he's got a lot of skill. His timing is a little off sometimes, but overall, he seems like he belongs in the NHL, and he's in a third-line role.
And if they want him to learn, like,
what's the point?
Just keep at the NHL level, he'll learn there, and then he'll be a little insulated if you put him with McDavid.
I just don't really get at this point what's the use of sending him down. And even for them, they're trying to make the playoffs. You want the best players in your team. So
didn't he score the other day?
Yeah, he scored in his first game.
Yeah.
So I don't get it. But it's funny that it's going to be a fun Oilers season to watch from a distance, because they're sort of like, the media is like cannibalizing the team, and then the coach is, I mean, I get Tom McClellan being frustrated, but I think overall this franchise is under some immense pressure, and sadly it's not realistic pressure.
Yeah. Well, this is going to be a pivotal moment for them, because with McClellan really blasting Benoit Pouliot, this can go one of two ways. Either it's going to wake everyone up, or they're going to say, okay, it's three games into the season, you're already pulling your hair out.
Like, what's your deal?
What's your deal? We don't feel good about this. So the next month or even couple weeks is going to be really interesting to see how they respond, because it could blow up in their face, or it could be a positive turning point.
Yeah, they could very easily stop listening to him.
I mean, that's sort of my gut, is that although I think it's not necessarily a bad thing to, like we said earlier, really cement that culture early on, this does seem like an overreaction.
It felt like, that way
like
to me.
Like, bad games happen.
Yeah.
You know, like, you guys aren't even contenders yet. There's no need for this. And if McClellan's going to, I mean, like, you can only play this card so many times. You can only call out your players in the media so many times before it loses its effectiveness. So if it doesn't work this time, if he does it again, I hate to use the cliche, but he's going to lose the room.
That was
because they have no reason to care about Todd McClellan's words.
That was the interesting thing, is that he did this in the media rather than keeping it in-house and just pulling Pouliot into his office. And I'm sure he probably did that too, but I thought it was kind of it's
creating narratives, which is not healthy for this team.
This early in the season, like, three games,
and you're 2-1.
Yeah, I mean, I love Todd McClellan. I think he's a great coach, but it's really early in the season to have this kind of rock bottom reaction.
Especially since they played well. Like, they outshot attempted the Sabres by a healthy margin. So it's not like it was all bad.
Right.
You know, attention to detail, like, slip-ups is one thing, but generally speaking, they played a decent game.
Yeah. I do get the frustration. I think he came in and wants to make sure that expectations are high and that everyone knows that we're better. We've done a lot to improve by virtue of drafting guys like McDavid.
Yeah. We haven't really done much to actually improve. Yeah.
Yeah. But
no, totally. Yeah.
So I get the frustration, but it just seems early for this kind of reaction.
Yeah, I haven't seen one game from anyone this year, three game, four games in, where anyone looks like they're in midseason form yet.
Right.
So, like, absolutely not. Yeah. I mean, no one looks great, and that's why it's puzzling. You know, after 10 games, I would get it, but I feel like, especially since McClellan is an experienced coach, you know, he's coached those younger teams, the Team North America in the World Cup. He was with a veteran team in San Jose. You know, I feel like part of this is the Canadian media sort of getting to him, because I'm sure the scrutiny isn't the same in Edmonton as it is in San Jose.
Right.
You know, in San Jose, you got like three guys following the team, maybe four guys at the morning skate. Now you got like 20.
Yeah.
It's a little different. And, you know, I actually don't know what the question was that led to that answer.
It sounds like I couldn't hear it. I watched the 4 or 5 minute clip, but the impression I got from McClellan's reaction was that it was directly about why Pouliot didn't play periods 2 and 3.
Yeah, so we shall see.
Interesting times await in Edmonton.
I kind of enjoy this.
It's dramatic.
In a sadistic way. I enjoy watching this blow up in their faces.
Yeah, the really twisted side of me. Not that I want to see, you know, ill of anyone. I don't want to see anything bad, but it's fun to see, you know, the roller coaster ride.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's just funny because it's like, what did they... It's so funny how badly placed their expectations are. You guys didn't get that much better in the offseason. No matter what they think, they didn't really get that much better. They traded away one of their best scorers. They brought in a sort of mediocre defenseman. They brought in a power forward / Milan Lucic, whatever you want to call him.
Right.
It's like, what is the expect? Like, why the heck? What are you guys expecting? I just don't get it.
Yeah. I don't know. I think they're realizing that they have all these first round picks, and it's like, okay, we should be better now, right, guys? Right?
Yeah.
We have McDavid, and I keep saying we. I keep placing myself in that locker room. I don't know why I'm doing that.
Are you an Oilers fan, secretly?
I may secretly be an Oilers fan. I don't know what's happening. Something happened in Southern California. It changed me. I don't know what it is.
Well, I guess speaking of Southern California, the Anaheim Ducks.
Nice. That was nice.
Off to another Red October.
Yes.
Starting the season 0-2-1. And I got to say, they don't look good.
They don't look good.
Like, I know it's early. I know there's still a lot of time. They're still missing a couple players. We know for sure they're missing one. We don't know if the other is going to come back, Hampus Lindholm.
And they're opening up 5 straight on the road.
They're on the road, but from what I've seen so far, this team doesn't look ready to compete. Like, they've adopted this style that's very hard to replicate or to have success with game after game. They just kind of chip it out and then try to chase it down in the neutral zone. They have such a hard time entering the offensive zone. Like, it's hard to watch. Outside of the Getzlaff line, they struggle mightily to get past the opponent's blue line.
And didn't you say the last game that Carlisle split up Perry and Getzlaff?
He did. And I actually thought that was kind of smart, because it's like, you got to spread the wealth a little bit. There's literally no scoring depth on this team right now. They just waived Mason Raymond today for whatever reason.
I saw that.
What?
Yeah.
They weird.
Well, they sent him down, so he's got to pass waivers. But actually, no. They probably put him on the waiver wire because he has a two-way contract. So if he clears, he'll go down. But he shouldn't have to be waiver eligible since he has a two-way contract. That's only if you're on a one-way. But anyway, so they waive Mason Raymond, who actually, to me, has been one of their better players through 3 games. Like, he's made some nice plays, bringing that skating ability. I heard that they might be to make room for Emerson Edom, who they brought back. But yeah, this team, to me, just... Look, Randy Carlyle's brought in to do one thing and one thing only, and that's to get them to the Stanley Cup. right? Like, and I know that sounds ridiculous to say out loud, but really that's what it was. They thought that they couldn't get there with Bruce Boudreau. They were never going to win that crucial game seven or even close out a series. So they're like, you know what? Randy Carlyle's the answer. And so far, I'm treating every game with the highest level of scrutiny because that's the expectation, is to be a Stanley Cup team. The reality is that they're not. They gutted themselves of talent up front. Their blue line looks messy. We talked all summer about how talented they were on the blue line, but really, I mean, Cam Fowler's played the most minutes of any defenseman so far, which kind of puzzles me. Josh Manson's looked good, a couple guys that look good, but it's really, it feels messy. I don't know. I know it's three games in. Of course it's three games in. They're missing some good players, but I feel like the ceiling for this team might be even lower than we thought.
And then how's John Gibson looking?
He's looking okay. He didn't have a very good first game. I also think that two of those goals in the first game against Dallas weren't really his fault. I mean, guys just left wide open in the slot. But against against the Islanders, he held his own. Like, they were outshot 16-3 in the first period.
Yeah, that's bad.
That's really bad. And he let in one goal, but he held his own. He kept them in it. It could have very easily been a blowout, especially since a lot of those shots were on the power play. So,
are they giving up a lot of shots against?
They're giving up a lot of shots. They're actually generating a decent amount, but you know, in a three-game sample, it's tough to say which one of those will endure. I'm getting the sense that the shots against will endure because of the way they play in the defensive zone and the way they struggle to get into the offensive zone. But they're giving up a lot of chances, and you saw it even in the overtime goal against the Islanders. Perry was just kind of watching his man.
Yeah.
Bailey just danced in. So it's been a rough start for the Ducks, and I'm not really sure where they go from here. Like, I guess you just keep hacking away at it.
That's the thing. We kind of knew, based on what happened in Toronto with Carlisle, that they were going to give up more shots probably this season than they had under Bruce Boudreau. But, you know, with the talented defensemen and the few talented forwards that they still have, I thought that maybe that would kind of balance it out a little bit, but it sounds like it's not doing that.
It probably is, you know? Like, we just probably don't... We don't know the alternative universe where they don't have the talent that they have. So this could be a lot worse. I got to say, though, I've been impressed with Cam Fowler. I know I've harped on him before on this pod and in writing, but, you know, Carlisle's tasked him with the most minutes of any defenseman, and he's looked good.
Two goals already, right?
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to last, but he's looking like maybe it's knowing that he has the confidence of the coach, whatever it is, but he's looked better, so there's that going for him. Simon Desprez is already out with a concussion. No one knows when he'll be back, so that's troubling. He didn't really look that good in the first game, but no one really did for Anaheim. And then, to me, Josh Manson looks great, but he's only playing like 16 minutes a night, which is a far cry from last season when he was on the first pairing with Hampus Lindholm. So.
Right. And then Raquel will be back when?
3 weeks.
3 weeks.
Yeah. So it's going to be a long 3 weeks.
Yeah, it will.
I honestly, like, they play New Jersey on Tuesday. They have to win that game.
Right.
Because then you're on 4, like, or 0-3-1, 0-2-2, whatever you want to call it.
And New Jersey is very beatable.
New Jersey is very beatable, so you lose to that team. You're still on the road, and I think they have some tough games coming up. So, I don't know. They might not even win a game until they come back home against Vancouver.
I shouldn't say very beatable. That's an insult to Corey Schneider.
And yeah, and New Jersey's not like an easy game.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you got and even Vancouver, like, that's who they play in their home opener. Vancouver beat the Hurricanes yesterday and, like, looked kind of good doing it.
Did they really?
Yeah. Did you see Sutter's goal in overtime?
I saw your tweet. We were on I-5.
Yeah.
I-5, that's what it's called.
Ha-ha.
We were on I-5, and I saw your tweet saying that Sutter sniped.
The 5.
Nah. It's the I-5. Five. It's
the
I-5.
Five. Oh, he picked the corner. It was a good shot.
But, yeah, Brandon Sutter maybe will matter this season.
Sutter... Easily the best-looking Sutter in that entire lineage.
Imagine the Vancouver Canucks surprising everyone this season.
Man, could you imagine if they were just trolling everyone and, like, hustling, like, pretending they were just bad at hockey, and then just all of a sudden, 2016, 2017...
It's not going to happen.
No, it won't. But it'd be funny. It would be funny.
Kinda.
It would be.
I'd rather laugh at the Oilers. That's funnier to me.
You know what? Can we laugh at both? It's fun.
We could. We could. We do live in a world where we can do both.
We can do both.
Freedom of laughter.
Freedom of laughter and multitasking.
All right. So, yeah, the Ducks are troubling.
The Ducks are troubling. But what about your other team?
Yeah, the Habs, the Montreal Canadiens. They are also troubling and even more troubling. Carey Price isn't back yet. He's not going to play in the home opener. Apparently, he's lost a lot of weight being sick. So he's kind of like working himself back into shape.
So that should assuage some of your negative feelings.
Yeah.
Because you thought that he was actually sort of injured and the flu was a cover. But, you know, losing all that weight is actually a symptom of the flu.
Well, they could still be lying for all we know. I don't know.
It could be both.
Yeah. But I saw he was practicing today with the team. So he'll be back. The Canadians are intriguing. Like, I love what I've seen from the Galchenyuk, Pacioretty, Gallagher line. But then Michel Therrien broke it up in the last game.
Of course he did. Of course he did.
I was going to ask why, but then...
Because he's Michel Therrien and he doesn't know what he's doing. That's why. Alexander Radulov looks pretty good.
Does he?
I got to say, he... What's cool is that you see he hasn't played in the NHL in, you know, like 4 or 5 years. And he makes a lot of plays that you don't really see NHL players try. For example, there was a play in overtime against Ottawa where he was sort of... He was trying to break the puck out of his own defensive zone, and he got pressured, and he was about to lose it, and instead of just chipping it out, he went for the drop pass because there was a guy right behind him, and he tried to pull it off, but the guy was on top of him before he could really get the pass off. But I like that. I like that mentality, that sort of outside-the-box thinking that you don't really see in the NHL. He's also pretty strong. Like, I forgot how big he is.
Yeah, he is big.
Yeah, and he's fast, and he's got a good set of hands. He scored a really nice shootout goal against Ottawa, roofed it on the backhand. So,
a little bit of life injected into that lineup.
Yeah, and Al Montoya looks good. I mean, the Canadians are going to struggle on the back end. Jeff Petrie's return was really nice. He scored a goal, but I don't know. I guess we got to bring it up. Shea Weber,
how's it going?
Early returns.
The progress report.
Early returns are not great.
Not great.
I got to say, very, very unimpressed by Shea Weber so far. He's hit some guys really hard, and he's pushed people around. And he had a point shot, not a slap shot, but a wrist shot that was tipped in.
So from the front office, their trade is a success so far.
Yeah,
he's done everything they thought he was going to do.
He is unimpressive. Like, there's just no other way to put it. Like, if you compare what PK Subban does to what Shea Weber does, there's just no comparison. PK Subban controls the game with you know, his skating. Shea Weber's just kind of out there.
And Subban had that really nice lap shot goal the other day.
Yeah, and then the celly.
Yeah.
That was nice. But yeah, the Habs, I don't know. Like, it's kind of depressing talking about this, honestly. But we got to talk about it more because a listener, Danielle, submitted a question. She asked, do you think that if Carey Price didn't get hurt and Montreal got to the playoffs, talking about last year, PK would still be traded? What do you guys think?
Oh, that's a good question. I get this feeling that unless they went to the third or fourth round, that he probably would still have been traded.
You really think so?
Yeah, because they've been to the playoffs before. This just sounds like a thing with Mark Bergevin, and
what, being an idiot,
and whoever else. I mean, yeah.
I mean, I can see it, but they clearly did not want him.
Yeah, like, that's what I'm saying. Unless they won the cup, or like really threatened to win the cup, it just seemed like they made up their mind, and that it was more than just hockey related.
I don't know. I think that if Carey Price stays there, they have a better season. There's less off-ice drama. You see how it goes in these Canadian markets. As soon as there's a drop-off, all the narratives start getting injected. You know, you hear the, like with the Oilers, the stuff about the practice and the guy getting benched. Like, these Canadian media members just jump on these stories. And with the Habs, it was the same thing all season long. It was Max Pacioretty didn't like PK Subban. That was a story all year long. And there was dissension in the locker room, and PK Subban was alienating teammates. If they're winning games, if Carey Price is playing to the level we've all seen in the last few years, I don't think we hear those kind of stories, you know. And then they make it to the playoffs, and, you know, even if they win a round or two, I don't think we see PK Subban get traded.
That's fair. But I honestly think, and I
hate to say this because I guess to some degree we are media, but I think that the PK Subban trade was sort of media driven, because they were the ones all year long talking about how Max Pacioretty wasn't comfortable as a captain, wasn't getting along with PK Subban, like this and that. And it's not like the front office guys aren't paying attention to this stuff. Like all of a sudden it sort of permeates into the fabric of the city, you know, and people that's their view of the team. Like even when I went back this summer, when I was in Quebec, I was in Montreal and Quebec City. Like I was talking to family members and they all for the most part, they all had negative views of PK Subban. It was unbelievable.
Really?
Like, these are Habs fans. And then you look at the newspapers and you see columnists just crushing him, you know, like after he's traded, obviously, but it's like the media just, I honestly think this was like a media trade.
I do agree that the media played a significant part in getting him out of town, but like another extending on the hypothetical scenario, which, you know, is sort of pointless, but
hypotheticals are fun.
Yeah. You know, let's do it. If he doesn't have a good, if he has sort of a Stamkos type playoffs where he doesn't put up a lot of points, even if he's doing well in other areas, but doesn't put up a lot of points, then you still see, you know, the media, you know, hounding him for, you know, not being the productive player you're supposed
maybe
to be.
Maybe, but that's not the same as, you know, like saying that he is like alienating teammates. You know,
no,
what
but
I mean?
Like, yeah, yeah. I mean, I do think that everyone in the front office, you know, from the coach on up, wanted him gone.
Well, that's
and,
the thing.
Yeah. So yeah. Any sort of reason, whether it's them missing the playoffs or him just not performing the playoffs, any sort of negative reason would have been good enough for them to get rid of him this year.
Well, that's the other thing is that, look, obviously the media has a part to play, but to some degree, the general manager has to be above that. Like, that's not to excuse Marc Bergevin or Michel Therrien. They, from the very beginning of Bergevin and Therrien's tenure in Montreal, 2012-2013, have consistently wanted to change PK Subban's game instead of accentuating it. It was always, how are we going to fix PK Subban? And they never liked the guy. And when they lost, they found they're out. They just like, all right, now we can just ship him out of town for a guy that we like a little bit.
And that's exactly what I was about to say, is it's going to sound conspiratorial, but all this time, it seems like they were looking for a reason to get rid of him, and losing a whole bunch in the second half last year was a pretty solid reason in their minds.
It's the perfect excuse. And like, to get even more conspiratorial, you know, Michel Therrien was a media member for a couple of years when he was out of a job. Like, I wouldn't put it past this organization to leak stuff to the media. I mean, they all do it.
Yeah.
Teams around the league.
Yeah.
And
to get even more conspiratorial, I heard that Marc Bergevin is actually a member of the Illuminati.
Yeah.
So
he's also just like a dozen squirrels in a human suit.
He is just pulling all kinds of strings.
Yeah. So,
like the point that you made, I think, is a fair point about how winning cures everything.
Yeah.
We've seen that. We kind of saw it with San Jose, where it looked like Doug Wilson was trying to force Joe Thornton and or Patrick Marleau out of town, taking the C away from Joe Thornton. And there was that big rift where Thornton wanted Wilson to keep his mouth shut. And then they did some retooling in the offseason. They went all the way to the Stanley Cup, and you don't hear any trade talk or...
Oh, yeah.
So...
Well, and that's the funny thing is how results drive every narrative in sports. You know, never mind that the Canadians just had a system that was completely reliant on their goaltender being their best player every night. You know, that's not a great story for the media. So let's just, and that's just part of them not really understanding the game, how it works. Instead, you inject the whole, oh, this guy doesn't get along with his teammates thing. But you look at the Sharks, they wanted Thornton and Marleau out of town. They were going to do it. They tried to.
Yeah.
They wouldn't, like, neither Thornton nor Marleau would waive their no trade clauses. And all of a sudden, you hear people talking about, oh, Doug Wilson had this great vision for this team of retooling them. Like, it's sort of ironic that the Sharks made it to the Stanley Cup after their general manager basically did everything he could to tear down the franchise.
Yeah.
You know, like signing John Scott, trying to trade the best players. Like, the Sharks could have taken a turn for the worst. Like, I really hope that Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau go down as the two best Sharks ever, because they saved this franchise by not waiving their no-trade clause. Imagine if they're gone.
Like, last year does not happen.
Joe Thornton is still one of the, like, five best centers in the NHL.
Yeah. And yeah, he could have been the MVP last year.
He could have been. He could have. You could have even made an argument for the Selkie.
Yeah.
So, Doug Wilson deserves very little credit for what happened last year. Like, yeah. Sure, he made the moves after, and that's great. But he was gonna blow this thing up.
Yeah, I mean, he brought in some key pieces like Martin Jones and Joel Ward, but
yeah,
Joe Thornton.
Without Thornton or Marlowe, none of that matters.
None of that matters, and a lot of credit to Joe Thornton and Patrick Marlowe for moving on. Marlowe bounced back from a 19-goal season and scored 25. Joe Thornton played out of his mind.
Yeah, and Pavelski.
And Joe Pavelski.
Yeah, and Burns. I heard someone describe him as a machine gun from the point. And I thought that's pretty accurate. Yeah,
he looked like it tonight. He had 2 goals.
Yeah, so it's funny how, you know, results drive all the narratives in sports, and the narratives can tear down the franchise quickly. And I don't want to make it sound like the Canadians are headed for doom this season. Like, it's going to be a slower, like, more steady decline. But the general manager has got to have foresight. So you can blame the media all you want, but if you got a smart guy who sort of sees what's going on here, then it won't happen.
True.
But you can look at Anaheim last season, you know, when they got off to that awful start,
yeah.
And you know, everyone was calling for trades and firings of Boudreaux, and they were like, "No, we're going to ride this one out." And they were the best team, or one of the best teams in the second half.
Yeah, they were the best team, and yeah, that's a great point. Is that although Bob Murray deservedly gets a lot of criticism, he gave Bruce Boudreaux a couple good cracks at it, and he showed him confidence when he probably didn't have to. Now he should have kept him. And again, like, firing Bruce Boudreaux in and of itself isn't a crime, so long as the guy you bring in is sort of at least as good or better, which, you know, you'd have to, there are only like maybe 3 other guys who are better, but you have to have a good plan in place. And from what I've seen from the Ducks so far, it looks like they didn't really have a good idea of the post Boudreaux era. You got a weaker roster and potentially a weaker coach.
And that's kind of what I'm wondering is, because last year, Murray gave Boudreaux a chance to dig the team out of the hole, and he did. I'm wondering if what's the line this season, where, because I don't think he just hired Carlisle, so I don't think he's going to ditch him right away. But
oh, he will.
Can they possibly play so bad that he's going to be left with no choice?
Absolutely not. Actually, on Friday on the Anaheim Calling podcast, which you should listen to, we kind of talked about this issue where it's like, this is Bob Murray's season. You know, like, he got his coach that he wanted, he got the team he wanted, he got the approach he wanted, so he's going to do, like, this season will entirely be a reflection of him.
Yeah.
So if he fires the coach right away, that's basically saying, I made the wrong choice, and I don't really see him doing that. You know, like, even if the Ducks are, let's say, 10 points out of the playoffs at the trade deadline, I don't think the Ducks become sellers. I think that they trade a young guy to get a veteran to push for that last spot. Because this is, like, if Murray doesn't get this team into the playoffs this season, he might not be back the next year.
Yeah.
Or definitely not in 2 years, you know? Which is kind of funny because in the summer of, I think, the summer of 2018, the Ducks have like 5 guys off the books, creating like something like $17 million in cap space. And it's like, if Murray can't guide this team to the playoffs now with the guys they have, how can, as an owner, you can trust this guy to make the most of that money 2 mm-hmm. summers from now? Because that's a lot of money. In hockey especially, you can get a lot for like nearly $20 million.
And Lindholm...
Basketball, that gets you one player.
Yeah, Lindholm still sitting on his couch shows that, you know, he did not make the most of the money he had this year.
Exactly. And now they waived Raymond. I'm not sure why. Maybe to create some room. But there's no... At this point, there is no way Hampus Lindholm comes back unless maybe even 2 guys get traded.
Right.
Because he's going to make at least, you know, $5.5 million. I think that's like guaranteed. I think it's going to be closer to $6.5 if he comes back on this team.
And I saw a tweet the other day. It sounds like it's pretty quiet between the two parties.
It's not frosty yet. We haven't gotten the talks of broken off tweet yet.
Oh no.
But I don't see how they bring him back unless, you know, maybe that's why we're seeing Cam Fowler playing the most minutes.
Showcase,
trade him. But even then, that's $4 million in cap space.
Wow.
You still gotta trade someone else or move someone else down.
Yeah.
So
So
I don't know. How did we get to this point again?
We started off with the Canadians.
We were talking about front office and sort of vision of teams. And
yeah, and so that's the thing. Murray, this season, this is all on him, you know, good or bad. Because if this team does well, then the media will be able to say, oh, look at Murray. He really took charge of this franchise and decided, you know what? We need more toughness. We need a coach who's been there, even though Bruce Boudreau has won like a million more games than Randy Carlyle. Never mind that. And so if they do succeed, it'll be all on Murray. If they lose, it'll be all on Murray as well, because he's the architect of this team.
It'll be interesting to see if they keep getting off to the slow start, if Carlyle can make that adjustment that Bruce Boudreau was able to make and turn things around or not.
Also, it's been 3 games.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
This podcast, #3games. It's been 3 games.
The 3 games podcast. Yeah, we need an asterisk next to like every statement.
Yeah, exactly. Man, the summer was just so long. It just feels like...
We're hacking away at it now.
It feels like we're hacking away. But you know what? Don't press the panic button.
Well, here's another thing. And I was thinking about... This is why, to me at least, I'm scrutinizing these Ducks games, you know, pretty heavily, because the next 50 games up to the trade deadline are sort of going to decide the outcome for the season, right?
Right.
Because if they're out of it by the deadline, I don't know what move they can possibly make to propel themselves in, especially looking at the competition they have. I know the Oilers look a little shaky, but this playoff spot, that third spot in the Pacific Division is up for grabs. So every game is going to matter until the trade deadline. And you know, it's not really an 82-game season for them right now. It's really like a 50-game season.
And it's even more interesting, you know, with Jonathan Quick being out perhaps months.
That's something we should discuss.
Yes.
Let's do that right now.
Let's do it.
Joe, you brought it up, so why don't you fill the listeners in on the situation?
Well, Jonathan...
Do it quickly.
Oh, God.
Bazinga.
Okay. All right. Moving quickly away from that. You know, Jonathan Quick got hurt in his first game, the first period, against San Jose Sharks, and they did an MRI. Did they say what it was?
I thought I read it was his groin.
It was his groin. Okay,
it's some lower body.
Lower body
injury.
The proverbial mysterious lower body injury.
The body injury, and it looks like he's going to be out. He's officially listed as week to week. But he
won't be back till like after the All-Star game.
I saw something along the lines of like 3 to 4 months or something.
Yeah, that was the initial, like the night he got hurt, that was the initial
report.
It sounds like it's gonna be longer.
Yeah, but you know, so like with we were thinking that in the Pacific, you know, the top spots were going to be occupied by San Jose and, you know, LA,
like by default, basically.
Yeah, you know, because they were the most complete teams in, you know, that division. Now, you know, barring a major injury or, you know, just a complete collapse in San Jose, we're thinking that now they're the two spots.
Maybe. I guess that's a good question.
Yeah, like,
does that open up the second spot, the Quick injury?
I think it levels the playing field a little bit more.
A little bit, yeah.
For as much flack as we give Jonathan Quick, and
he's still better than Jeff Zatkoff.
Yeah. That's what I was getting at. Like, Zatkoff is not good.
Yeah. So Joe is saying, is Dean Lombardi, who we're going to talk about in a few minutes.
We might.
You know what? I think we will.
We're going to see.
We're going to see. A Drake quote. Nice.
A Drake quote.
I like it. Gotta work Drizzy into
shout
it.
Shout out.
Shout out to the six. Because Zatkoff is a career backup.
Yeah.
And there's a reason for it.
Yeah. He's no Jonas Enroth.
Yes. So he's a career backup. Lombardi probably going to have to make a move for a goaltender, maybe?
I don't know. That's a tough one.
I think they had
Peter Budaj in the minors last year. He would have been good for this situation, probably.
Yeah.
I think they should ride it out with Zatkoff for a little while, because although losing Quick is a blow to this team, I do think that they're still miles ahead of Anaheim and Edmonton. Because you look at the way Edmonton and Anaheim are playing, and they're still trying to figure out what kind of team they are exactly. Like, they don't really have a set system. Well, they might have systems, but they're not really working, right? Mm-hmm. Or not working well. LA has a fleshed-out identity by this point. They can sort of plug in any player into that lineup, and they know exactly how they're going to play. They're going to play sort of almost like a mistake-free game. You know, they're just going to wear teams down with their forechecks. So as much as it would be maybe fun to say that the Kings are going to drop off without Quick, something tells me they're going to be just fine.
I mean, I do think that it's the second spot is still, you know, LA's to lose.
Yeah.
But the gap between...
This does make it interesting.
Yeah, between but two like, and three
who's
is going to
catch them, though? That's my thing is, as much as I think, I agree with you, this does hurt them. I can't see Anaheim or Edmonton, and we haven't even talked about Calgary. I can't see any of those teams making LA sweat in the standings. Yeah. And I just can't.
And it's
right
not,
now, and it's been three games.
Exactly. Yeah. Hashtag it's been three games.
Yeah.
And also, it's not like the rest of LA's lineup is bad.
I mean, I do think that Edmonton's speed could give LA some trouble because they're not a fast team and they're only really getting slower. You know, they've gotten thinner up front. So maybe if Edmonton sort of figures it out with this big practice that they had today, you know, if Benoit Pouliot learns his lesson, then maybe they can give LA some trouble. But again, I just don't see it because LA's still a well-oiled machine.
Yeah, and their MO is defense. They're so good defensively.
Yeah, and they still have Andre Kopitar, who like might be, I don't know, the like second or third best player in the division.
Yeah, maybe. And then Tyler Toffoli is looking really good again.
Yeah, and Jeff Carter is still pretty good.
Drew Doughty's still there.
Yeah, Jake Muzzin.
Yeah, so it's not doom and gloom.
It's not all bad.
By any means.
Yeah, and Devin Setoguchi doesn't look bad either.
He looked good in the first game against San Jose.
He
was protecting the puck well down low, made a nice centering pass from his knees below the goal line protecting the puck. So it's good to see him up there on the top line. He's up there because of the Gabrick injury. But early returns, not bad for Devin Setoguchi.
Yeah, I'm glad they took a chance on him, and I feel like they kind of had to because, again, like we said, they're a little thin up front, and he's going to add a nice little blend of skill and speed
on
that wing.
Yeah, and he's still only in his early 30s, and anyone that doesn't know his story of fighting his way back from alcoholism and bouncing around.
It's a good story.
Yeah, being out of the NHL, it's a good story. Look it up.
Yeah.
The Quick injury, we'll see how they decide to address it, if they just keep playing that staunch defense or if they feel like they have to make a move. They've got time to see. They've got a good team.
But,
so.
And that's the interesting thing is you look at the Canadiens last year when Carey Price went down, and I think at this point you could, even at the time, I remember myself saying, like, you know, they're giving Condon way too much time here. Like, he's not good. They need a better goalie.
I believe what you said before that was all they have to do is go .500 the rest of the season. They're in the playoffs.
Because they would have started like 9-0. They just needed Condon to be good enough. He clearly wasn't that good to begin with. They gave him too much rope. Then they brought Brandon Ben Scrimmage. Anyway, I don't want to talk about the Habs. I'm talking about the Kings here. My point is, you can only wait so long. You know, if the goalie's not good enough, you got to find another answer because you don't want, especially a team like LA, I don't want to say they're on their last legs, but this is a team firmly in win now. You don't want to waste a year of the primes of Kopitar, Doughty, Muzzin, those guys. You don't want to waste time because you gave your backup goalie too much leash, you know?
Exactly.
So if I mean, you know, the Philadelphia Flyers have two really good goalies.
They do.
Someone's got to go.
The way it's shaping up right now for LA's schedule is they've got, you know, two challenging games in Minnesota and Dallas coming up. And then after that, they're playing two softer teams, presumably, in Vancouver and Columbus. And then after that, they start playing the Central Division.
Yeah, okay. So Murderer's Row. Yeah.
That'll be the test.
I don't think they're going to struggle that bad. But they're going to lose some games because Zatkoff just isn't Jonathan Quick. Like, that's going to happen.
Right.
Like, I don't even think it's that outlandish to say that.
No, I think you're right. We mentioned Dean Lombardi. Do you want to talk about him?
So, I don't remember the specific quote, but it was something like, last April, there was an interview with Dean Lombardi, the general manager of the Los Angeles Kings, and also Team USA, and he had this to say on the topic of analytics and just sort of like a, you know, applying analytics tactically to his coaching staff. He said, "What do you think my chances are if I go downstairs and give Daryl Sutter a computer sheet and say, why don't you use this?" First off, I love the computer sheet.
Computer sheet. It's 1992.
That's sort of a Dodger reference, right? Because you know another LA sports franchise hired Dave Roberts in the offseason, but the front office was going to have the final say on all managerial calls, I believe.
Well, the hilarious thing is that Dean Lombardi is clearly not a fan of analytics. You know, it's funny. All these old school guys always start off with, well, I think there's value, blah, blah, and then they just completely tear it down. I think it's funny because the Kings have, like, analytically been, like, the best team, you know, in, like, the past 5-7 years. And it's, and you know, there was more to that quote. It was a longer quote, but he also said, you know, it's hard to say what stuff matters. It's hard to say if any of this stuff has correlation with winning. Like, you can literally Google correlation, Corsi, winning, and you will find multiple studies, multiple articles done by really smart people. They're really smart. That there's clearly some relationship between getting more shot attempts than the other team and winning. Like, this isn't rocket science. There's really what we've discovered with all this sort of like numbers crunching is that volume in hockey is ultimately the biggest decider in winning. It doesn't really matter the quality of your chances so long as you get more chances than the other team. Most of the time, if you can do that, you're going to win more. You're going to win a lot of games. And that's what the Kings have done. They've been the best possession team in the NHL for the last like 5 years.
Yeah.
So it's hilarious to me that Dean Lombardi not only would say something that's completely false at the correlation thing, but then also say that there's no utility to this that the coaching staff couldn't find. And like, they're already doing it right. Whatever they're doing is already working analytically, but it's just funny that he wouldn't even try to see the value in it.
And it almost sounds like he's like passing it off to Daryl Sutter, where
do you think that curmudgeon would ever want to look at a computer sheet?
Yeah, it's like,
I think the answer might be no, but still.
I mean, quite likely, but
it's information, you know.
It's useful information, and you've said it before. Do you think that Google and Apple don't look at analytics? And
yeah, because analytics is just looking at stats and figuring out what stats matter and what stats are repeatable. And if you can, and you see guys getting hired around the league all the time, you know, these stats guys, and what they're very good at is analyzing this information, all the stats that they have available to them, you know, and packaging it in a way that's useful to the coaching staff, right? Making these little videos, and it's like, hey, judging from these numbers, I see that this is what you're doing. This is how you can change it. And you talk in sort of like hockey terms, and these guys will get it, you know? I was listening to an interview with a stats guy who works for like a women's like collegiate team in Canada. And he was talking about at first when he got hired, the coaching staff was very skeptical, but he's very good at sort of packaging it in a way that they can understand. And now they love it, you know? And so that just goes to show that there's not really this big divide. It's not like this scary computer thing. It's just looking at events that happened on the ice and sort of figuring out which ones you should do more often.
Yeah, the numbers are gathered to formulate predictors of success.
Yeah.
And it's not to say that that watching the game and doing the eye test doesn't have value either, because they both do. But the numbers just illustrate what's happening and is supposed to allow you to see patterns so that you can hopefully predict, find repeatable success.
Yeah, because, I mean, even the most finely tuned hockey mind, you know, you're only human. You can't catch everything when you're watching a game. Like, you can't see exactly where the players are, how they're moving. Like, you can only catch a certain snippet, and then you got to catch the next play, and then, you know, your memory sort of fades. You come away with the game with your general impressions, you remember certain plays, but the numbers don't forget anything, right?
Right.
So what I do when I watch hockey, for example, is I'll watch the game, and then after the game, I'll look back at the numbers, and I'll sort of compare my impression of the game with sort of like what actually happened.
Right.
Right. And I'm like, okay, I feel like I had a decent sense of this game, or like, man, like, I felt like this team was playing better. And then what you can do is sort of say, okay, well, what were they doing well? And then what was it that they didn't do well that led to these numbers that like didn't work for them? So that's what happened with Anaheim this weekend. I thought they played horribly against Pittsburgh, and then I looked back, and they actually, I think they had more shot attempts than Pittsburgh.
I think a good illustration that compares the eye test to the numbers is what you see brought up often is this team is winning, you know, 3-1, but the other team is massively out-hitting them. And it's like, you know, from an old school mindset, you know, you see a lot of hits, and that sort of it used to be an indicator of success.
Yeah,
you know, because you know hits mean that you're wearing down the other team. The problem is, what really wears down teams is puck possession, and a hit doesn't count if the other team doesn't have the puck.
Yeah,
which means that the team doing the hitting doesn't have the puck.
Exactly,
and not driving the play.
Yeah, and you really have to be careful with the analytics, because there's been a lot of movement towards micro stats now, where guys will just sit down, or they'll have computer programs tracking every on ice event, every movement, not just, you know, like shot attempts, stuff that you can just get from NHL.com. So like stuff like zone entries, zone exits, and you know, you'll see stuff like zone exits per 60, and it's like, do you really want to lead the league in zone exits per 60? Does that mean you have to get out of your zone more often than any other team?
Yeah,
you know, so it's like, you got to be careful with stuff, and you got to see what matters. But I think it's good to have as the most information possible is always the better answer to just saying, no, I trust my eye test. Like, come on, you know?
Absolutely.
Like, I don't pretend to know everything about this game, and when I watch it, I'm just trying to focus on the things that I know that I can sort of gauge on my own, and then I try to, like, inform that with numbers and talking to other people, reading articles, you know, to sort of get that perfect picture.
Yeah, it's just interesting that Dean Lombardi is Joel Sutter's boss. Like, yeah. Again, and he's saying, do you think I could go down there and get Daryl Sutter to look at this stuff? Dude, you're in charge.
The way I interpret that is more like Daryl, well, that's true, but also I think he's sort of appealing to authorities, saying, well, Daryl Sutter's the Stanley Cup winning coach. You think he's going to care about a computer sheet? You know, like,
yeah,
I think that's maybe what he's saying. But yeah, either way, it just doesn't sound intelligent.
No, you're probably right.
It's interesting because something I was thinking earlier when we first brought this up is, you know, there's room for everyone, because, you know, you have, you know, the general manager who's the architect of the team, and then you have the head coach who, you know, is, you know, basically,
he's like the composer.
Yeah. You know, he's orchestrating all of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, the analytics, you know, if you have an analytics department, they're basically, you know, your advisors to, you know, both the coach and the GM, telling you what's working and what's not working.
Yeah.
And, you know, all of it can function together.
Yeah.
And so when you have analytics highlighting what's going on, and you can, you know, relay that to both the coach and the general manager, it allows everyone to work together more harmoniously.
Exactly, because what's the point of not having an analytics department? That's what I've never understood. It's like, what are you gaining by having less information?
Yeah, there's no sense burying your head in the sand. Like, you can hire a department and choose to ignore all the information if you have,
like, the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah, if you have confidence in, you know, what you're already doing. But it's a good idea to still have those numbers.
Well, that's why I like the general managers who sort of don't really come from a, like, sort of stereotypical hockey background. So it's sort of like the Stan Bowmans who, you know, come from, they're sort of like in the middle of the pack, where they grew up around hockey, but they weren't necessarily NHL players. So they're sort of able to see both sides, you know, and I feel like that's the best balance. Brandon Shanahan has done a good job of that in Toronto, you know, as the president of hockey operations. He's able to see the value in analytics, but also recognize that there's still a ton of value to talking to guys who have been around the game for years. I mean, like, come on, you can't deny that there's no value to having guys in your organization who've just spent their lives around rinks, you know, watching games. Like, that traditional scouting does have value, because it sort of allows, like, the numbers and the eye test work hand in hand, in that you have your numbers telling you what the result is, and then you have the eye test telling you how that result is achieved, mm-hmm. right? And that's the thing that we see with a lot of players, is a lot of the times, well, they say, oh, but this guy can do this thing so well. But at a certain point, and it's like with Chris Russell, people always say, oh, he was so good at breaking the puck out. That's fine, but if the result is consistently bad, then that thing doesn't really matter. You know, like, the result has to trump the eye test stuff at some point, you know?
Yeah, it doesn't matter if he's good at breaking, if he can break the puck out a lot, if he's allowing a lot of zone entries.
Exactly, and that's the thing. So people are really starting to throw, especially in the mainstream media, I've noticed people throw around the micro stats a lot as sort of like a trump to the conventional analytics, you know, like Corsi and stuff like that. But ultimately, if this is the result time and time again, that your team is getting outshot or outscored when this player's on the ice, his qualitative skills don't really matter. It's like with Shea Weber. Shea Weber's a perfect example. You watch Shea Weber play. Well, I watch him play. I don't think he's anything special, but a lot of people watch him play, and it's like, oh, he's beating people up. He has his hard slap shot. this guy has to be a top 10 defenseman. But yet his team gets outscored when he's out there. We have like years of data to support this now. So that stuff is great, but the result is saying that it doesn't really matter.
Mm. Yeah. The scientific method coming through testing hypotheses with data and numbers.
Who would have thought that using evidence to make decisions would be like a wise thing?
Yeah, dude. I mean,
this has been a philosophical podcast.
It's been a deep podcast.
I'm enjoying it.
Very Socratic.
I think this is what happens when there's only three games to talk about.
Yes. Blow everything up. Blow it all up.
Oilers. How far into this are we?
We're just over an hour.
Okay.
We should wrap it up.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess, it's been a good philosophical pod, but I think we've sort of hit everything that's been going on.
We have.
Little Oilers bashing.
In our small sample size.
In our tiny sample size, yeah.
Yeah, only so much can happen in three games.
Yeah, but anything exciting coming up? I can't really think of anything.
Anything coming up?
I'm waiting for Hampus Lindholm to like make a decision, or to sort of decide his future.
Yeah.
Whether it's going to be in Anaheim or not.
Yeah, and it's not even entirely his decision. It's like, is Anaheim going to find a way to make that happen?
Yeah, seriously.
I just want them to have like a camera on him like all day, every day, just like a GoPro set up like in the corner of his house, like a surveillance camera, and it'll just be the Hampus watch.
Yeah, I'm just happy hockey is back, honestly. Like, I've been watching so many games, and it feels healthy.
Yeah, like, it feels normal.
I'm not moving whatsoever. The only movement that's going on is like me reaching for like a glass of water and moving my thumb to like tweet something sarcastic. But like, it's been great. I gotta say, like, Sunday it was raining out, and I just laid there on the couch with my cat and just like watched hockey, and it was glorious.
Man, you're secretly 79 years old.
Hey, no shame. No shame in my game.
Hey, no shame in your game. I enjoy it. And you know what? Got to sit around and watch the 49ers do nothing.
I actually didn't watch that game
because I did.
I was working.
You missed nothing.
Well, Colin Kaepernick had a touchdown pass, so
yeah,
there's that.
Yeah, he had a pass, a deep ball that he threw to Torrey Smith.
Yeah.
And then Cap also had, I think, like a 29-yard run. He ran for like 60-something yards.
I mean, the people, I've already heard someone say like, oh, they were better with Gabbert. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, don't talk,
yeah,
please.
Don't talk.
You don't deserve a seat at this table.
you're not invited to Thanksgiving. But it was hard to watch,
man. Damn, Thanksgiving's coming up, by the way.
It's coming up, dude. Our alumni game.
Yeah, the Santa Clara High School Roll Hockey alumni game is always, we have a tradition that it's always the morning of Thanksgiving. And yeah, I think this year will be the ninth one. Something like that.
Wow, that happened fast.
The first one was in 2009.
Yes.
So it's like the ninth or something like that. No, it's not the ninth.
It's
the
seventh.
Seventh. Yeah. But yeah, it's been cool to see the guys every year, see some old faces.
Get out there before we preemptively work off the turkey and all the dinner that we're going
to
eat.
This year, we need someone to track the stats for that game.
We do.
I want to check out my Corsi.
Yeah,
I want to see how it is.
I'm hoping that my shot attempts per 60 is through the roof.
Oh, yeah. I'm just going to throw every puck on net. Man, I can't wait to... I haven't played hockey in so long.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
I haven't played since February, man.
Yeah, you're pathetic. Joe has a game tonight.
Joe has a game tonight.
Yeah, I have to leave in like 15
yeah,
minutes.
Yeah, and he actually has to get to it, so we should probably wrap up. I'm going to go eat, because eating is good. Eating is very good.
Hope you drink some water. Drink plenty of water.
Yeah, dude. Hydration. Super key.
Super key. Major key. Don't drink Arrowhead.
I drink filtered water from the fridge.
Yeah. You know what? You're a healthy person. I respect you.
Anyway, let's get out of here.
Guys, thank you for listening to another episode of the Garage Hockey Podcast. If you want more, you can find us on iTunes and Stitcher. You can tweet your questions to us on Twitter @GarageHockeyPod. Guys, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for listening.